I've asked Margaret to open your old room, and by now it should have had time to air out. He looked up, startled. Margaret? She's still in service? He was going to say alive, but thought better of it.
Don't be so surprised, the Queen said, smiling. 4 years is a longer time in the life of a 13-year-old than in that of one who's nearing 80, and she intends to serve until death calls her away.
Hanalea's maidens were an order of warriors bound to the service and protection of the Grey Wolf line. Margaret had served as nurse, teacher, and protector to his mother and Aunt Melanie, and then to Hanalea, Adrian, and Liz. She had brought an array of skills to the job. More than once, she'd drawn her sword to protect the royal family. She had a tongue like a sword as well, when she believed that her young charges required correction. Ash didn't look forward to feeling the bite of it now.
Chapter 21 A Mixed Reception. Ash had been struggling to come up with a story to tell when his mother and her council began asking hard questions. They must know that he and Lila had been missing from school since solstice. The next morning, at a private breakfast in her chambers, he asked about plans for a debriefing, but the Queen seemed in no hurry to move on to that phase of this reunion.
I had cleared my calendar so that I could spend this week at Temple. Mourning for you, she said wryly. Since that's no longer necessary, we will lay plans for your resurrection.
Rumors are flying already. I've scheduled one meeting with the council for this afternoon. Tonight we'll hold a small reception for family, close friends, and high officials only. When people ask questions, tell them you'll need to speak with me first. Tomorrow we'll announce your miraculous return with a service in the cathedral temple, a parade through the city, and a street party. Beginning the day after that, you'll have more than your fill of meetings, so enjoy these 2 days before the ordeal begins. He had 2 days, then, to settle on a plan. He spent the rest of the morning being bathed, shaved, and shorn to make him as presentable as possible. To his surprise, he found 4 fine coats hanging in his closet, along with 3 pairs of breeches and a pair of clan-made boots.
"Where did these come from?"
he asked Margaret, who was filling drawers with small clothes and shirts and tidying what didn't really need to be tidied.
"Most of those clothes belonged to your Da. May he rest in peace," Margaret said.
She looked him up and down.
"It might be that now you're big enough to fill them. Your sister, the Princess Alyssa, had them cleaned and hung them in the closet so they'd be here when you returned."
Startled, Ash looked up at Margaret.
"She did? When?" "Right after your father was killed and you were carried off. She never gave up hope that you were alive. She used to come in here now and then and brush the dust off, so they'd be ready. On the day of your funeral, she locked herself in her room and refused to come out."
The eye she fixed on him was disapproving.
"I'm sorry I put her through that," Adrian said.
He could spend the rest of his life apologizing, and it still wouldn't be enough. There was no way to atone for this, no penance great enough to even the scales.
"Her Majesty had new stoles made for you with your father's ravens. They're in the drawer. Will you be needing anything else, Your Highness?"
"Not if it comes with a lecture."
"No, thank you. Don't forget, Her Majesty the Queen's reception begins at 6, and it's 5:15 now. You'll hear the bells in the cathedral temple."
"I remember," he said. "I'll be there."
"She probably thinks I'll run out on that, too."
He waited until he was sure Margaret was gone, before he fingered the nearest coat, an emerald silk.
He leaned down to sniff it, hoping it might still carry a trace of his father's scent. But whether due to cleaning or the passage of time, it did not. What would it have been like had he stayed? If he and Liss had worked through their grief together instead of each on his or her own, he wouldn't have met Jenna, and Gerard Montaigne might still be alive. He might be married now, or he might be dead. There was no fair way to compare what had been with what might have been. He just had to find a way forward. Here was a coat he recognized, one that sent his stomach plummeting into his boots. It was his father's clan morning coat, stitched with his sister Hanalea's gray wolves. On the back, the Waterlow ravens, and the high wizard flame and sword down the sleeves. His father had worn it to Hannah's funeral. Ash sank onto the bed, cradling the coat in his arms, his tears falling on the leather and wool, his fingers tracing the intricate stitching. He shivered, the hairs on the back of his neck standing on end. It was almost as if his father had prepared this coat for him, blazoned with the signia of those Ash had loved and lost. Should he wear it in honor of his father? Or would it be seen as arrogant? As if he'd wandered back home and made an immediate claim on his father's legacy down to his serpent amulet? He decided he didn't care. It had been a long time since he'd worn anything but the drab, brown healer's garb at Arden's Court, and the nondescript breeches and coats that had served him well on the road from Arden's Court to Fellsmarch. He was just fumbling with the tiny buttons on his shirt when someone banged on the door. "Come," Ash said, guessing he was far enough along in dressing to entertain company. It was Lila Barrowhill Byrne, unfamiliar in the blue uniform of the Queen's Guard. She ran her eyes up and down the length of him and snorted. "Back for a day, and already tricked out like a proper princeling," she said, flopping into a chair. Something about the scene reverberated in Ash's memory, recalling his last day at Odin's Ford, when Lila barged into his room and invited him to a party at Wien House.
"You should talk," Ash said. "Looks like you're planning to join the family business."
She shook her head.
"Nah," she said. "I'm in disguise."
"That's a disguise?" Ash raised an eyebrow.
"I'm disguised as someone who could fit in here," she said, thrusting her fingers into her collar and yanking at it until a button popped off. "That's better," she said. "This comes off as soon as I cross the border. By the way, you can forget Lila Byrne. I'm still Barrowhill."
"Barrowhill? I was just getting used to Byrne."
"As someone who has more names than a Clicket House rusher, you'll get no sympathy from me."
"But..."
"I'm a spy," Lila said, "and a smuggler and a fixer. If I want to keep working that line, I can't show up here at court and be Captain Amazing Byrne's daughter. If you think this place isn't full of spies, you're wrong. There's too great a chance I'll be seen by unfriendly eyes and heard by unfriendly ears." She gave him a measuring sort of look. "Somebody gave you up to Arden, and that somebody wasn't me. It wasn't widely known here at court, either. I hear that the Queen didn't even tell your little sister. So, who would it have been?" Ash couldn't help thinking of Micah Bayar, his father's default when it came to villains.
"You'd probably know better than me," he said.
"Anyway, I need to get back to Arden's Court before everyone forgets how very helpful I can be. Out of sight, out of mind, you know."
"You're going back there?" Ash stared at her.
"I'm leaving within the hour."
"I thought maybe you'd stay here permanently, now that you don't have to watch over me at Odin's Ford."
Though keeping Lila here had its risks, Ash was suddenly eager to have someone around who didn't remember him as a 13-year-old runaway.
"I'm sure Captain Byrne could use your help to..."
"No!"
Lila said. When Ash stared at her, she added, "I hate it here. Isn't that enough of a reason? This is just a job to me. The family I care about is at Wolf's Head, on the coast."
"Wolf's Head?"
"You wouldn't know it," Lila said. "You're not supposed to. Anyway, they're the ones who raised me. I'm traveling south by way of Spirit Gate, so I can visit with them."
"Oh," Ash said. "All right, then."
But Lila seemed compelled to make her case.
"You don't think the Queendom needs eyes and ears in Arden, with a new king and a civil war in the offing? Anyway, the food is better down there. I've never been much for barley, and I do love me some tamarack wine."
"Don't you think that with King Gerard dead and the Thanes in rebellion, King Gerard will have enough on his hands without turning his eyes to the north? Especially since my mother didn't spurn his offer of marriage."
"Maybe," Lila said. "I wouldn't count on it. Besides, if this war ever ends, I'll be out of a job."
"Maybe," Ash said. "I wouldn't count on it."
After a brief silence, during which Lila showed no inclination to leave, Ash said,
"Is there something you want, or are you just trying to fill the empty hour until you go?"
"Who'll be at this reception tonight?"
Lila was staring up at the ceiling, but Ash couldn't help thinking she was focused closely on his answer.
"I don't know," he said. "My mother said that it would be family, close friends, and high-ups. The general announcement of my resurrection isn't until tomorrow, so I can't imagine it would be a big crowd tonight."
"What about Shadow Dancer? Will he be there?"
Lila cut her eyes toward Ash, then away again.
"If he's in town, I expect he will be," Ash said. "I haven't seen either Shadow or his father in years, and they were practically family growing up." He paused. "Why?"
"Oh, I worked with Shadow quite a bit on various projects, having to do with Arden," Lila said, nibbling on a fingernail. "The last time I saw him was at Chalk Cliffs. It was right after his fiancée was killed in an Ardenine attack. He was in pretty bad shape."
Ash was embarrassed to know so little about what had been happening in his homeland. Lila had never lived here. In fact, she said she hated it here. Yet she was much more up on the latest news than he was.
"Bones," he said. "I didn't even know he was engaged. Who was she?"
"Her name was Aspen Silverleaf," Lila said. "A clan leather worker. I suppose that's what he..."
Her voice trailed off.
"Anyway, I thought I'd better mention it."
"I didn't know about that. Thank you for letting me know, so I can avoid saying anything stupid."
"I'm mainly looking out for him," Lila said. "Don't worry. There's plenty of room for you to be stupid on lots of other topics."
She said this with an echo of her usual snarkiness. But Ash could tell that her heart wasn't in it. Just then, the cathedral temple bells sounded the quarter hour. Ash draped his wizard stoles over his coat. They weighed on him more than silk and stitchery ever had before.
"I suppose I'd better go. Are you going to stop in for a little while?"
Lila came to her feet and shook her head.
"Nah, I've seen the people I need to see. If I stay any longer, I'll see the people I'd just as soon avoid."
"Well, be careful," Ash said.
"I'm not the one with a target on his back."
She hesitated a moment, then grudgingly embraced him.
"Take care of yourself, healer."
As soon as he was ushered into the Queen's reception chamber, Ash all but ran into Micah Bayar. The wizard took a quick step back, nimbly avoiding the collision.
"Welcome home, Your Highness," Bayar said,
inclining his head in a polite bow.
"Your sudden resurrection has brought joy into your mother's heart after an unusually dark season, and for that I am glad."
Ash's heart-to-heart with Lila had kindled old suspicions.
Did Bea know I was alive all along? Did my mother tell him or not? Did she trust him to know? Was he the one who betrayed me?
He tried not to stare at Bayar's high wizard stoles, the colors he'd last seen draped over his father's shoulders. Bayar made no attempt to hide his own slow study of Ash.
"I see your father in you more clearly now than before," he said.
It was impossible to tell from the wizard's tone and expression whether he thought that was a good thing or a bad thing.
"If you see an element of my father in me, I consider that a compliment," Ash said.
Bayar turned and motioned to a tall young wizard with white blonde hair, who stood just behind him and to one side.
"I believe you know my nephew, Finn."
"Finn,"
Ash said, with real warmth this time.
"It's good to see that that I'm still alive."
Finn smiled a crooked smile.
"That's my line, I believe."
They embraced.
"Finn has been attending the academy at Odin's Ford," Bayar continued. "Now I hear that you've been studying there as well."
He paused long enough to give that sentence a little extra bite. Did that mean that he hadn't known Ash was alive, and that his mother hadn't confided in him?
"Interesting that the two of you never crossed paths."
"Does he think I'm lying about being at Odin's Ford? Why would I do that? So I could bask on a beach somewhere?"
"Maybe we did, Uncle Micah," Finn said, rolling his eyes. "It's been 4 years. We've both changed. I'm not sure I could have picked Adrian out of a crowd, especially since I wasn't looking for him, because we all thought he was dead."
Really? Ash thought. Finn had changed. He appeared gaunt, a bit hollow-eyed, the bones in his face standing out more than before. But 4 years wasn't all that long, and the Wizard Academy was smaller than in the past. Ash couldn't help thinking that if he had seen him, he would have recognized him.
"Every marching season, Finn's been fighting for the Queendom," Bayar said. "He's played a pivotal role in keeping the Southerners at bay."
Maybe Bayar was just proud of his nephew, but Ash wondered if that was intended as a dig at the runaway prince. By now, Finn's pale cheeks were stained with color.
"Uncle," he said, "I'd like to hear more about what Adrian has been doing."
"Hasn't the spring term already started?" Ash said.
Finn nodded.
"It has, but I'm not going back. I have a new calling. I'm apprenticed to Lord Vega in the Healing Halls."
Ash stared at him.
"In the Healing Halls? You mean to be a healer?"
Ash couldn't ever remember Finn expressing an interest in that field. Finn nodded, laughing.
"Is that so hard to believe? As I said, we've both changed over the past 4 years."
"Finn suffered a serious wound on the battlefield last summer," Bayar said. "He spent a great deal of time under Lord Vega's care. Now he's got it into his head that he wants to be a healer. Hopefully a season emptying bedpans and treating tamric boils will..."
"This is not some kind of whim, Uncle Micah," Finn said. "I know you think I should have returned to the academy, but this is the path I've chosen. My parents are supportive, and that should be enough for you."
"They're more supportive of your betrothal than of your chosen vocation," Bayar retorted. "Anything that keeps you here until the deed is accomplished is..."
"You're out of line, Uncle," Finn snapped. "If you want to run somebody's life, then you should have had a son of your own."
Bayar gazed at him for a long moment.
"Perhaps so," he said.
He delivered another brief bow to Ash.
Your Highness.
And he walked away, his robes swirling around him.
He had such high hopes for me, Finn said in a flat voice, looking after the High Wizard. He doesn't understand that I've changed. He thinks I don't know what I'm doing, but I do. Don't let it bother you, Ash said, instantly on Finn's side. Anyone in opposition to Bayar was an ally. What's this about a betrothal? Who's the bride-to-be?
Finn brightened, looking over Ash's shoulder.
Here she comes now.
Ash turned to see his cousin Juliana striding toward them, lit up like solstice. She'd changed as well. In contrast to the frilly clothes Aunt Melanie used to dress her in, she wore a long wool skirt and a tailored jacket. Her hair was wound into a twist on the back of her head. He'd always thought of her as something of a lightweight, but now she looked like someone who could get things done.
"Cousin," she said, embracing him, "I see you've found my fiancé."
Ash stood like a stump, rooted to the floor, but Juliana had enough enthusiasm for both of them. After a moment, she held him out at arm's length, laughing.
"You look like you've been run over by a cart," she said. "I hope you approve."
"Of course I approve," Ash said. I never realized...
You and Finn?
He remembered what his mother had said.
"You think time stops at home while you grow and change." "It's very recent news," Juliana said, splaying her hand in front of Ash's face, showing off her emerald ring. "So you're not too far behind everyone else. I've asked Alyssa to stand up with us, and I hope..."
She glanced at Finn, then back at Ash.
"It might not be my place to ask, but I hope you will too, now that you're back from the dead."
"From dead to living," Finn said. "I think you've changed more than anyone. And of course, I would be honored to have you as part of our celebration, if you are still here."
Another dig? No, Ash thought, not from Finn.
"You've got to grow a thicker skin, Sulhan, if you're going to see subtext in every remark."
"My mother's made it clear that she's not letting me out of her sight for a good while," Ash said, grimacing. "Can you blame her?"
This was a new voice, a clan voice, coming from behind. Ash turned to see Fire Dancer, possibly his father's oldest friend. He was a little more weathered than before, but blessedly familiar.
"Dancer," he said, I heard about Kat. I am so sorry." "Catfire went down fighting, which is the way she would have wanted it," Dancer said, using her upland name. "The time for your naming has come and gone. Are you still Speaks to Horses, or have you taken a new name since you went away?"
"I've taken many new names," Ash said, "but I've not let go of that one yet."
"Then perhaps we can do that at Midsummer," Dancer said, "when you've decided what your name should be."
Runs away, Ash thought. Flees the field?
"I heard about Shadow's fiancé," Ash said in a low voice. "Is he here?"
With that, a heavy hand fell on his shoulder. Adrian spun, his hand automatically finding his amulet, until he saw that it was Shadow Dancer, a cup in his hand.
"I am here, Speaks to Horses," Shadow said. "It does my heart good to see that you are quicker than you used to be."
His words were thick, and Ash caught the scent of blue ruin on his breath.
"And you are slower than you should be," Fire Dancer said, taking the cup from his son's hand and setting it on a nearby table.
He nodded at both of them before he walked away.
"Better slow than dead," Shadow said, gazing after his father. "I heard about your betrothed," Ash said, not wanting to dance around the topic. "I'm so sorry,"
Everyone is, Shadow said. And now, even my revenge has been stolen from me.
What do you mean?
Somebody got to the King of Arden before I did,
Shadow said, retrieving his cup and draining it.
Killing him was the only thing I had to look forward to.
He thumped his cup down on the table. When he turned back to Ash, he frowned.
What?
Nothing, Ash said. Let's just celebrate the fact that he's dead. Maybe this will be an opportunity for peace.
Southerners killed my mother and my fiancé, Shadow said. There is a huge blood debt that has not yet been paid.
Collecting on a blood debt is never as satisfying as you think it will be, Ash said, feeling like the worst kind of hypocrite.
How do you know? Shadow growled. Flatlanders murdered your father and sister, and they tried to murder you. Haven't you ever wanted to take revenge?
Of course, Ash said, wishing he could extricate himself from this awkward conversation. But if the war goes on, there's a cost. We've already spent a fortune in blood and treasure. We'll always have reasons to keep fighting, but maybe there are reasons to stop.
I'm not ready to stop, Shadow said, until they pay for what they've done. Then I will be ready to talk about peace.
He refilled his cup.
We had a visitor this afternoon who wants us to get in bed with Arden for mutual defense. If I had my way, that will never happen.
A visitor? Ash said, grateful for this partial change of subject.
An emissary from Arden?
Shadow shook his head.
A pirate from Carthage. I don't think he was going to admit it, but Hadley de Villieux recognized him. Remember her? She's commander of the navy now. Anyway, she says he surfaced 2 or 3 years ago, and has been working the entire east coast, down to the southern islands and beyond. She wasn't sure how many ships he controls, but shipping has taken a huge hit.
A pirate from Carthus? Ash's mouth had gone dry, and yet it was as if he tasted blood, metallic on his tongue.
Why would a pirate from Carthus involve himself in our war?
Shadow laughed.
He wants to involve us in his war. He came to warn us that an empress from Carthus was planning to invade with a huge army. He claims that he just came from Arden's court, where he managed to prevent an agreement between Arden and the empress.
He just came from Arden's court?
Shadow nodded.
We think that he and this empress must be rivals, and he wants to poison us against her.
Ash cleared his throat.
What was his name, this visitor?
His name is Evan Strangward, Shadow said. He's known as the Stormcaster.
He paused, frowning.
What is it? Do you know him?
Where is he now?
Adrian demanded, his heart thumping painfully.
He hasn't left the city, has he?
I don't believe so,
Shadow said. He looked over Ash's shoulder.
In fact, he just walked in with your mother.
Chapter 22 Queens and Knaves.
You should get dressed now, Evan said to Brody. We don't want to be late.
His first mate was stripped down to his small clothes, sprawled across a delicate velvet chair that looked like it might collapse under his weight at any moment. He was distracting, as always, but in a distant way, like a platter of sweetmeats after a feast.
"We should go home now, Captain," Brody said. "You've had your meeting with the Queen and her crew. She'll decide what she decides. The longer we stay, the more likely it is that we'll get into trouble. I don't like being so far from the sea."
Brody was right. They'd had their meeting with the Queen and her small council that afternoon. Hadley de Villieux introduced them without a hint of endorsement. There were several other mages present, including the High Wizard, Micah Bayar, and a healer, Lord Vega. The Wetlanders had been polite enough, but they'd questioned and debated him on every detail. When he told them he'd seen Celestine's ship off their coast, they shrugged and said that pirates had been a problem for years. When he warned them that the Empress in the East had all but conquered the desert coast and was preparing to invade the wetland realms, they said they'd been fighting off invaders for decades. Besides, pirates knew better than to venture too far from the sea. Fierce, fearless, unstoppable desert horse lords? They'll freeze to death in the mountains. One uplander in particular, Shadow Dancer, seemed convinced that Evan was trying to persuade the Fells to get involved in his personal feud. They saved their deepest skepticism for his suggestion that the Fells seek peace with Arden, so that they could join forces against Celestine.
"Captain Strangward," Queen Rhaesa said finally, "we must direct our resources to the war we have. If another war comes to us, we'll fight that one too. As for suing for peace, you should be speaking with a young king in the south. We did not start this war, but we intend to finish it. We do not intend to bend the knee, and we do not intend to lose to anyone."
The meeting had been disappointing, to say the least. And then, hours later, this invitation to a reception. It had rekindled Evan's hope that something had changed, that somehow he could come away with an agreement.
"The Queen invited us to this reception," Evan said. "It would be rude to refuse. It is in honor of the Queen's son, who has come home after a long absence, so it will be a chance to meet him. Maybe we can win him over. Anyway, parties are often where important business gets done at court."
"What do you know about how queens do business?"
"It's in books," Evan said. "I've read about it."
"You're always reading," Brody said, like it was an accusation. "I don't trust the Wolf Queen."
"That's fair, because she doesn't trust us."
"If she intended to do business with us, she would have shown you more respect in the meeting." "You are the one who needs to show some respect, youngling," Tezza said. "Your job is to follow orders, not to argue with the captain."
"It's not that the Queen doesn't respect us," Evan said. "I think it's exhaustion more than anything. They've been fighting this war for more than 25 years. The Queendom is surrounded by enemies. They really don't need more bad news. Their resources are stretched to the limit."
"That's not our fault," Brody pointed out.
"No, it's not. But that doesn't make them eager to take on one more complication. The thing is, I don't want to leave without a commitment from her. It's not like we have an ambassador here who will follow up after we're gone."
"And if she won't commit?" Brody said.
"She has to." This was their best option, because it was their only option.
"She doesn't have to do anything," Brody said. "We'll freeze to death while we wait."
"If you'd put on some clothes, you'd be warmer," Evan said.
"I don't like wearing so many clothes," Brody protested.
But he levered himself out of the chair, retrieved his shirt from where he'd dropped it on the floor, and slipped it on.
"I'd like to go to a party,"
Jorani said wistfully, smoothing the skirts of her silk dress. She'd been close-mouthed and wide-eyed ever since they arrived at the palace.
"You can come to the next one," Evan said,
"especially if Brody keeps complaining."
They were met at the palace gate by a handful of the Queen's blue-coated guards, who escorted them to a small reception hall. As soon as they were ushered through the doorway, Evan recognized several people from the meeting earlier in the day. As the Queen had promised, this was an intimate, informal gathering. The queen herself was welcoming newcomers and directing them to food and drink.
"Captain Strangward," she said graciously, "I'm glad that you and Rhodey were able to come and celebrate with us." She stood on tiptoe, scanning the crowd. "I know Adrian is here somewhere, no doubt catching up with old friends. Ah, there he is. Come with me."
The queen led him toward the back of the room, to where the Uplander, Shadow Dancer, waited with a tall, broad-shouldered young mage, wearing an elaborately stitched coat and a scowl.
"Adrian, this is Evan Strangward from Carthus. Lord Strangward, this is my son, Adrian Sulhan."
But no, it wasn't. It couldn't be. Evan found himself looking into the icy blue-green eyes of the King of Arden's gifted healer, Adam Freeman.
"We've met, Mother,"
Freeman said through his teeth. He gripped his amulet.
"Step away from the queen, you murderous bastard!"
Evan saw no point in denying who he was, or forcing the hand of the queen's guard by refusing. He'd have to talk fast if he wanted to survive the night.
"Healer,"
he said, taking two steps away from the wolf queen and keeping his hands at his sides.
"I'm glad to see that you survived that unpleasantness at Arden's court."
"What unpleasantness?"
the queen said, looking from Evan to the healer and back again.
"What's this about Arden's court?"
"I survived,"
Freeman said, still fixed on Evan.
"And unfortunately, you survived, but not everyone did. Surely you don't regret killing the King of Arden,"
Evan said, taking a blind shot, hoping it hit home.
"I can't imagine that anyone is mourning him on this side of the border."
"You killed King Durad?"
It was Shadow Dancer, his body rigid, his eyes wide with surprise.
"One thing confuses me, though," Evan said. "In Arden's court, I knew you as Adam Freeman."
"In Arden's court?" the queen said, as if she couldn't believe her ears.
She turned to the healer.
"What is he talking about, Adrian?"
"I told you about Jenna,"
the healer said. He pointed at Evan.
"This is the man who murdered her."
"You said that you met a girl,"
the queen said, her back stiff with disapproval.
"You didn't mention that you met this girl in Arden's court."
"As I told you, it's a long story."
A story that he hasn't told up to now, Evan thought, and that gave him an opportunity.
"The good news is that Jenna is very much alive," he said. "In fact, I just saw her on the coast, near Chalk Cliffs."
"Chalk Cliffs,"
the healer repeated. Hope flickered in his eyes for a moment.
"Why would she be in Chalk Cliffs, and how would she get there?"
"Apparently, Chalk Cliffs is the place to be," Evan said. "We did not have a long conversation, because she was accompanied by a large and surly dragon. They flew off together."
The hope in the healer's eyes was crowded off by disbelief and hostility. He shook his head, dismissing Evan, and turned to the queen.
"So, what story is this pirate telling you?"
The wolf queen folded her arms, as if to fend off lies from pirates and errant sons.
"He says he came to warn us about an empress from across the Indio, who may be planning to attack the realms. He claimed that the entire east coast was at risk."
"Interesting," the healer said. "Just a few weeks ago, he was in Arden's court, negotiating with the king and claiming to be the empress's representative."
The look in the wolf queen's eyes was a familiar one, one Evan had seen on the healer too many times. He resisted the impulse to protect his throat. Just then, Shadow Dancer gripped the healer's arm.
"Speaks to horses," he said. "What does this Jenna look like?"
"Speaks to horses?"
Evan thought. How many names can one person have? I'm a slacker next to him. It took the healer a moment or two to tear himself away from the argument. He turned to the uplander and said,
Her hair was wavy, metallic-looking, streaked with copper, and she had golden eyes.
Evan noticed that he used the past tense. He doesn't believe me, he thought.
A girl approached me in Middlesea, Shadow said. She wanted some leather work done. She said her name was Riley, but from your description, it sounds like the same person.
Now the healer's full attention was on Shadow.
Riley? That was Jenna's friend when she was little. She sometimes used that name herself.
He looked from Shadow to Evan and back to the uplander.
What kind of leather work? She had drawn a pattern for it, but it was like nothing I'd seen before. It was a harness, but it was huge and oddly shaped. She claimed she rode the griffins and elephants in the circus, and needed new gear for a growing griffin. Sparrow made it, and Riley picked it up in Fortress Rocks. When was that? A few weeks ago, I was on my way back from Arden.
Evan was beginning to feel a bit superfluous, which was fine with him. The reception was apparently over, and the room had emptied out during their conversation. He began to edge away, but the Queen noticed and raised her hand to stop him.
Captain Strangward, she said, we need to continue this conversation in a more private place, after I have spoken to my son and to Shadow Dancer, and collected more information. I hope you will understand that we'll need to confine you and your crew to your quarters, under guard, until we can sort out truth from lies.
Her jaw tightened, her eyes as hard and brilliant as emeralds.
Do know that if you came here intending to lead us into some sort of trap, I will deal with you with a hard hand.
Evan could sense Brody stiffening behind him.
Evan knew that his crewmen wanted them to try to fight their way out before the healer shared his story and the Upland Queen ordered their execution. What Brody didn't understand was that there was nowhere to run. Evan and his handful of Stormborn couldn't keep on sailing while Celestine conquered the rest of the world. Even a pirate needs a port, eventually. He needed to make a stand, and somehow convince the Wolf Queen that they shared a common enemy. If she ordered him beheaded or incinerated, if he had to choose, he hoped for the former, it would likely be better than whatever Celestine had planned for him. It was some small consolation that, from the looks of things, the Wolf Queen intended to deal with her son with a hard hand as well. So he stood, forcing his muscles to relax, meeting the gaze of anyone who chose to look at him.
"I understand, Your Majesty," he said, "but I beg you to move quickly. Once Celestine gains a foothold in the realms—"
He trailed off, because he could see that the Queen was being distracted by a commotion at the door, raised voices, and a small crowd of bluejackets milling about.
"See what that's about, Captain Byrne," the Queen snapped.
Turning to another one of her guards, she said,
"Clear everyone else out of the room. I think this party is over anyway, and we don't need a lot of tongues wagging before we get this sorted out."
Captain Byrne wavered, as if unsure whether to leave the Queen in Evan's company to investigate. Finally, he crossed the room to the door as the room emptied. Moments later, he returned, accompanied by a travel-worn soldier, who was still muddied from the road. She was a woman, but she dwarfed nearly everyone else in the room.
"Corporal Talbot," the Queen said, "what are you doing here?"
A look of hope dawned in her eyes.
Did Captain Gray come back with you?"
She looked past the newcomer, as if she expected this Captain Gray to be right behind.
"Your Majesty,"
the soldier said, saluting, her expression haggard and grim.
"I bring bad news from Chalk Cliffs. After a fierce battle, the city has fallen."
Queen Rhaesa went pale, her green eyes wide. Chalk Cliffs has fallen? But how did this happen?
We were caught between an army from the west and warships from seaward, and clearly there were traitors within the walls that opened the gates to them.
The queen glanced at Evan, then back to the distraught soldier. An army? Was it Arden, or...
Talbot shook her head.
They sailed for someone called Empress Celestine, and they fought like demons. Even if we hadn't been massively outnumbered, they were all but impossible to kill.
Evan's heart sank like a stone. This was exactly the disaster he'd hoped to prevent. It was little solace that the Empress's arrival lent credence to his warning. Queen Rhaesa straightened, clenched her fists, and lifted her chin.
What about survivors?
Talbot hung her head, as if ashamed to be among them.
A small group of us took a boat out of the water gate, and we managed to get out of the bay and down the shoreline a bit. But one of the enemy ships gave chase and ran us down.
Captain Gray? The Queen said, her voice flat.
Talbot looked around, as if to see who was within earshot.
We need to speak privately, Your Majesty.
Chapter 23 Kings and Pawns. Hal's few days at home were less than satisfying. None of the people he wanted to see were there, and the familiar surroundings only brought back memories of what he stood to lose. His mother had always taken great pride in her gardens. Now the borders were blurred, overrun by thistle, the flowers blown and gone to seed. At the center stood the massive spreading white oak, symbol of their house. Legend said that it predated the breaking and the Montane line of kings. His little sister Harper used to lurk within its branches to avoid her scripture tutor and to intercept her brothers on their way to adventures outside the walls. Eventually, she talked the blacksmith's boy into setting iron bars into the wall of the back garden so that she could engineer her own escapes. No doubt, even now, she was scheming to escape her current predicament.
Wait for me, Harper, Hal thought.
He would not rest until he'd got them back. The prospect of seeing the Empress's hordes come riding down the western slopes of the Heartfangs lent a special urgency to his mission. It was fortunate that the Empress's obsession with finding the mage-marked busker had sent her north instead of south. But he was under no illusion that she would be satisfied with the Fells. His father had been in the field for months, so Hal was swarmed with petitioners and requests to settle disputes or make decisions on matters that had been deferred for too long. He'd spent so much time away that he was of little help in directing the household or answering questions from the farm managers and rent collectors. He was, however, a convenient target for complaints about shortages of, well, nearly everything, from wine to salt to fodder to men to work in the fields. This, even though the larders were overflowing compared to what he'd seen in the Queendom of the Fells. Roland was a nuisance as well. Since Hal was the highest-ranking person he could get at, the Thaneling was constantly at his heels, offering silly advice on all topics. At least Roland had birds on hand to communicate with the rebel forces. Hal sent a message to his father in the code they'd used since he was a boy.
It's Halston. I'm at White Oaks. Orders?
A message came back the next day in his father's usual effusive style.
Glad to hear it. You're needed. Report to Temple Church as soon as able.
As soon as Hal could extract himself, he was riding hard toward Temple Church, where the rebellious thanes had gathered. Roland was, of course, eager to come along, but Hal ordered him to stay behind on pain of court-martial. Temple Church was a good strategic position, astride the north road,
so that they had a good road straight to the enemy should they choose to use it. The same could be said for the king's forces, of course. Prior to the fall of Delphi, such a position would also have blocked access to the weapons factories and mines in the north. Now, with Delphi at their backs, hills to the east, and Tamron Forest to their west, it wouldn't be easy to come at the Thanes from any direction other than the south. Ordinarily, Hal might have actually looked forward to fighting in the Flatlands for the first time in a long time, but this time he'd be pushing for diplomacy and negotiation, tasks he had no skills for. There had always been a small garrison house and other military facilities at Temple Church. Hal arrived after sunset, and it seemed that campfires and tents spread across the plains as far as he could see. That was good news, up to a point. Armies are not good at waiting around with nothing to do and nowhere to go. Hal guessed that the command post would be in the garrison house. If not, those posted there would be able to tell him where to find his father. As it happened, he didn't have to do any fast talking to get in to see his father. The first person he encountered after handing off his horse was Jan Reeves, who was walking the paddocks, a list in hand. Reeves had been one of the first officers Hal served under when he joined the army, before he'd got his growth.
"Why, it's little Hal, I believe," Reeves said, a smile breaking across his face. "Lord Madeline told me that you'd survived that hellhole in Delphi after all."
After Reeves had lost an arm during an uprising in Bruinswallow, Lord Madelon had taken him on as quartermaster for White Oaks. Hal still called him Sergeant, and Reeves still called him Little Hal, though Hal towered over him now. Reeves was the only one allowed to call him that, as Hal had made clear to some of his fellow soldiers, who'd tried to follow suit.
"Sergeant Reeves,"
Hal said, grinning and clapping him on the back.
"Can you tell me where to find my father?" "He's in with some of the other lords, fighting toe to toe as usual," Reeves said. "It'll do him good to see you."
"I hope so," Hal said, wishing he could meet privately with his father and win him over before springing his news on the other Thanes. He heard voices before he reached the door of the meeting room.
"My men need to get home and into the fields, or we'll have no harvest at all this year,"
someone was saying. It was a voice Hal didn't recognize.
"The buds are already breaking, and with the vines not properly trellised, the quality of the—" "Blood of the martyr, Delacroix! Can you give it a rest?"
That was his father's unmistakable bass rumble. So the first speaker was Pascal Delacroix, Roland's father, until recently a firm ally of the king.
"If we don't strike now, when we have the advantage, you won't have to worry about your swiving harvest this fall. Someone else will be drinking your wine."
"All I'm asking for is a few weeks to get the estates in order," Delacroix said, his tone suggesting that he was trying to reason with the unreasonable.
"I don't understand why you say we have the advantage when the king still holds our families hostage. We should attempt to negotiate their release before we—" "Gerrit is stalling," Madelon growled. "We both know that. He wants to put us off until the marching season is over in the north, so he can commit his full army to dealing with us. Better to go now, when his forces are divided."
Bloody hell, Hal thought. I'm coming in on the wrong side already. Taking a deep breath, he pushed open the door. There were a half-dozen Thanes in the room, and all heads turned as he entered. He recognized Delacroix, young Lord Harrisford, Lord Henri Tourant, and his father huddled around a battered wooden table. Dirty cups and plates around them suggested they had been at it for a while. Hal brought his fist to his chest in a salute.
"Captain Halston Madelon, reporting as ordered, sir," he said.
Wood scraped on wood as his father shoved his chair back and stood. He crossed the room and roughly embraced Hal, murmuring in his ear,
"Good to have you home, son."
Holding him out at arm's length, he looked him up and down.
"You need a shave," he said.
"I know, sir," Hal said, "but you said to come as soon as I was able."
Sliding his arm around Hal, Matalon turned him to face the other Thanes.
"I believe you all know my son, Captain Matalon," he said. "He was taken prisoner in the fall of Delphi. By the grace of the Maker, he's escaped and come back to us."
They all stared at him. From the look on their faces, none of the others had been alerted to his recent resurrection, which meant that his father didn't trust any of them to know. Finally, Delacroix said,
"I was told that you and everyone under your command were killed at Delphi."
"A few of us were taken prisoner, sir," Hal said.
"My son Armand was with you at Delphi," Torrance said eagerly. "Was he captured as well?"
"I don't know, sir," Hal said. "I didn't see him among the prisoners, but that doesn't mean that he didn't survive. There were 30 men being held in Delphi, but there may have been some prisoners held separately from me."
"You didn't even ask about the soldiers in your own command?"
Delacroix raised an eyebrow. Delacroix, who'd managed to avoid any military service up to now. Wrestling with his temper, Hal gritted his teeth.
"I did ask, and I was told that there were few survivors," he said. "I didn't know whether to believe them or not. Then I was moved to Chalk Cliffs, where I was the only Ardenine prisoner."
"And you've been captive in the north for 3 months."
It was as if Delacroix was suggesting that any soldier worth his salt would have escaped before now, as if Hal had taken advantage of the situation to enjoy a 3-month vacation.
"And now you're the only one to escape."
The Thane tapped his fingers together as if this was significant.
"Quit interrogating him," Hersford said. "We should be welcoming him home, not grilling him about how he came to survive. We're going to need him if it comes to a fight with Jared." "It will come to a fight, Hersford. You know it will," Matalon said. "I've seen nothing in the sun that makes me think otherwise. Half the Boy King's army will come over to us when they find out Captain Matalon is with us," Hersford said, grinning.
Hal cleared his throat.
"I have some news about events in the north that might have bearing on a decision about whether this is the right time to take the fight to King Jared."
Hal's father raised both hands, giving Hal a warning look.
"Gentlemen, we've been at it since early this morning," he said. "This is a good time to break for the day, so we can all take a piss and have a bite, and I can debrief my son about events in the north. We'll reconvene tomorrow morning."
Chapter 24. Killing the Messenger. Hal knew going in that persuading his father to make peace with King Jared in order to unite against a common enemy would be a hard sell. He hadn't expected it to be impossible. He booked a room at the inn where his father and Robert were staying. It seemed like his little brother had aged a year and grown an inch in 3 months. He kept staring at Hal as if he might disappear. Apparently, he'd blamed himself for being elsewhere when the city fell. Over dinner, Hal relayed what had happened since the fall of Delphi. Well, not everything. Traitorous or not, he did not choose to share Captain Gray's true identity, or dwell on the bond that had grown between them during his time in the North. That would make his motivations even more suspect than they already were. His father asked few questions, until Hal described his meeting with the Wolf Queen, and her hope that the death of King Gerard might signal a new opportunity to end the war between the realms.
"If she wants peace, she should be sending word to the fledgling hawk in Arden's court," his father said. "That's how this whole thing started.
After the fall of Delphi, I informed Gerard that I would not be spending more men and money to further his grudge match with the witch in the north.